This is episode 26 of the Well-Rounded Wealth Podcast. What is going on, everyone? Today, we have a special guest. His name is Noah Whitaker. Noah, thank you so much for coming on. We know each other because we met in college at Elon together.
That's true.
And we were in an a cappella group together.
Yeah. It's probably the biggest thing.
We were in Vital Signs for pretty much all 4 years of college, and then we eventually bonded, became friends, became roommates, and
eventually
and we were always you were always the music man, at least from my perspective. You were very talented. You would do arrangements for the a cappella. You're welcome. I would see you in the dorm doing singing lessons, doing instrument lessons. And then it was COVID time, so it was from your computer screen and you were getting private tutoring and you were just like playing your instrument for a screen. It was kind of funny at times, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, how are you doing? I actually haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm pretty good. I've been just kind of figuring out what I'm doing in terms of like work, being a musician, kind of up in the air all the time, 24/7. But it's been fun. I'm not pressured to really do anything, so I've been having a good time just kind of figuring it out.
Yeah, why don't we give kind of a background on where you are and what you're doing now and how you got there?
Yeah, so I live in the Cayman Islands, which is, I guess, in the Caribbean. For those who don't know where the Caribbean is, it's the pirates of that place, below Jamaica, somewhere over there, kind of. All right, that's the best I can give for an explanation if no one knows. But it's a tiny little country, I think like 22, 23 miles across. Kind of looks like a whale on the map if you zoom in really small. But I've lived here my entire life. It's pretty culturally diverse. As you can tell, I don't really have like a strong accent or anything like that, but there is an accent. There is a Caymanian accent. It kind of just came out right there. But it's not too strong. It's kind of like if you mix like English and Spanish, like the rapidness of Spanish with like the like English with like a Jamaican twang, kind of like all of those together. That's the best I could describe it.
Do you guys speak English?
Yeah, it's English. It's the main language. But like there's tons of other people, tons of other cultures. Like my piano teacher was a Russian lady. It's everyone from everywhere.
Yeah.
Awesome. So our perspective, a lot of people's perspective, when they would meet you, they would think you were British. That was how your accent would come across to people.
Yeah.
And is what would you equate it to that at all, in your opinion?
No, not at all. I guess I say vowels kind of like a British person would. I went to a lot of my friends at school growing up were British, so there was a couple of people with British accents, but I never really picked up on it. I knew how to do it. And so like at Elon, I would sometimes do the accent and people would believe that that's just the accent I had, which is ridiculous, but you know, say whatever, act like however you want when you first introduce yourself to people and they'll probably believe it.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now in the Cayman Islands? You went back after school and what is Noah up to now?
My old music school, Cayman Music School, is what it was called. They're doing a little production of The Little Mermaid, but the junior version. I was music directing for that for a little bit. I was helping with some of the acting things. I am not an actor. Do not get me wrong. I cannot act. That is not my thing. But I was helping out just as much as I could with the performance aspect of it and just the musicality. And it's really fun because like a couple of those kids are like my younger sister's age, or like I knew them when I used to go to the school. And so seeing them now, and like they're all older, they're all a lot better at whatever their instrument was. It's really sweet. And it's kind of therapeutic coming back to it and like being a teacher and being in that role and being able to guide those kids. It's really, really fun. It's really like, I don't know what the word is, but gratifying. Yeah.
Yeah. What's that change in perspective? Because I mean, really, when you think about it, five plus years ago, you were in their shoes and you were the student. So like kind of like put yourself in that perspective of a teacher. Was that at all awkward at first, or was it daunting at all?
Well, I'm still like, I'm interacting with the lady who taught me. So I have to kind of like balance that teacher student role that I'm not in really anymore, but that's that feeling is still there. It's like, I'm not that much older. It's been 4 years, 5 years since I last taught with her or last was taught by her. So I'm kind of balancing that. But at the same time, I get to like see all the things that she did or that I had her do with me. And I'm like, oh, I can see what things work or what things don't work and how the students respond and how I responded when I was a student. And I could be able to like actually really pinpoint those small little things, those little aspects of things that I don't think she would normally have noticed or have really looked at. I don't know. It's kind of just, I get to be more specific or more particular about things.
Yeah, I think over the past few episodes, Jack and I and the guests we've had on is human psychology and the way you word things has been really evident theme. What we've been talking about, how, what type of I'll call them strategies have you been applying, especially with a younger kid? It's like, all right, I know you're a teenager. You think, you know, we all think we know everything when we're a teenager. It's like,
yeah.
How do you play into that?
I think I'm really lucky where the culture here is that they teach the kids to be really respectful, no matter, like, as long as you're an older person, they teach you to be respectful to anyone who's older than you. So I'm really lucky in that respect. There are a couple students always who are like sassy. They got the little attitude. They want to be on their phone. They want to chat with their friends. And like, luckily from teaching vital signs and being in that kind of relationship with peers, I know how to navigate interacting with people without seeming disrespectful or seeming like I hold a place of power over them, even though I technically do. I don't ever want that to be like something that, I guess, impacts how they respond to me.
Interesting.
That makes sense. Okay. Have you had to ever lay down the law for some of the kids who are kind of being rude?
Times. Are you kidding me? It's almost every single time. Every single rehearsal, there is a moment where I have to tell someone to be quiet. Or I'll snap at someone, as in like literally snap at them. Or I try not to yell. I try not to shout or say anything that would come across as aggressive. But you can tell when I'm being jokey and when I'm being dead serious. I think it's pretty clear. I mean, ask Mullen. I'm pretty sure he knows the difference by now.
Honestly, I technically have been taught by Noah for years because he was the music director of our a cappella group. So he was like, you know, it was like kind of like it's a class. He's the teacher. He's teaching the music. We were probably more rowdy and annoying than the students you have now, honestly.
100%. 100% were. It's something about teaching people who are your age. They just don't want to listen to you. But
that's true. And also the power dynamics are a little different. Because, I mean, you were a junior and there were seniors in the group that you're supposed to be in charge of in a way. So that's, the dynamics definitely get a little weird with that. Because, it's not just you're the older teacher and then there's all the younger students who are clearly at a lower level than you are.
Mm. It's weird looking back at it, but it's strange. It's strange now.
So what part of music is it for me, honestly, and everyone else? Like, what was it in a cappella and then what are you like teaching now? Because music's so broad. I mean, you got instruments, you got music, you got vocals and song and directing. Like, what part of it is it?
Well, with a cappella, I think that was really where I was learning how to teach. My first semester, I messed up so many times. I had no clue what I was doing. It was really just kind of emulating what I saw around me. But bit by bit, I feel like it was that's a hard question.
I can answer I think I was taught by you to start us
actually,
off.
Yeah, go for it. That might help me.
Like, the way that I looked at it, because I would say there are three levels going on right now here. It's the music, like, expert who really knows what they're talking about. There's me who kind of knows what I'm talking about. And there's Patrick, who's a total outsider to the world of music. My perspective of the way that you would teach us, at least in a cappella, which is all singing, that's what a cappella groups are.
Yeah.
But it was Noah was the guy who there's sheet music, like with all the, you know, the music and the notes, and Noah kind of would break it down. Sometimes they were his own arrangements, sometimes they were other people's, but kind of teach us, okay, here's what the music wants you to do, and here's how they want you to sing it. And not just this is how to sing the note right, it's all right, this is the part of the language, the music language, that's telling us that we need to make our voices like louder and louder, increase and increase, or we need to be more subtle, or we need to kind of have a certain rhythm to it or a certain pronunciation of our syllables. And he would really help us in doing that correctly. And if sometimes we could just pick up on it, but other times we, like for me personally, I would go to Noah and ask specific questions of, okay, I'm not really sure what I don't know if I'm doing this part right. I don't know if I'm kind of singing it with the right vowels or if I'm using the correct register from my throat. And then I would ask, like, what should I do? And then Noah would know exactly what to do. That was my perspective of the student-teacher relationship.
Well, more often, I'll try my best. Every single time, I knew exactly what I was saying. But I think that it really was a lot of learning each individual voice. Like, every single person learns differently and sings and performs differently and feels and has different, like, levels of comfortability with music. So there were certain people who had never ever done music before, had never been in the class, like music class ever, but were naturally inclined. And there were others in the same position who had no clue what they were doing and were totally in the dark. And then there were others who were music majors and were 100% on it every single time. And there were other music majors who messed up every time when Phil were failing part checks every single time. So it was a wide swath of people. And with each person, you kind of, I mean, they're my friends. So like I get to see them in classes and I live with them or every other day see them, but like you get to know those people and what they're comfortable with and how they like to learn and like how they respond to certain words or like certain ways of talking. So you kind of, it was less of like just strictly teaching, but more like learning people. It really didn't feel like I was like a music director in a class. It really felt like I was learning my friends and trying my best to like guide them through my, like how I interpreted the music and trying to teach them to understand that interpretation, I think is the best way I can put it.
That's fascinating. So Jack, remember we were talking about this with Andrew in one of our prior episodes, but communication, it's 56% body language, 37% pseudo-verbal, and then 7% verbal. And based on what you were saying right there, the pseudo-verbal, like your tone and the way you, the pitch and tonality of the way you convey those words, that sounds like what you had to bring out. So in each individual person, how did you recognize what they were inclined to and were like, that's what I need from you?
It really was just trial and error. Like I had to kind of just throw things at them and see what they responded best to. Like I know with Mullen, it worked best when he was singing with other people. And if there was like a point where I need to like work on something, just doing that like in our dorm or like privately, like not in the big space, was better. And we worked really well with that. And he also ended up learning and performing music on his own after that. So I didn't really need to do any kind of work with him. He just learned on his own. So it doesn't take much before people can kind of run with it and like teach themselves. But not everyone is capable of that. So like it was, yeah, again, a wide swath of people.
How do you feel getting psychoanalyzed on the podcast, Jack?
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I would say one thing that I saw from my perspective and one thing I learned about myself, because I had multiple music directors for my time in Vital Signs and I've been taught by different people in different fields. It was how I dealt with things. Like sometimes I learned that I actually do like pressure put on me, but I don't like it when the pressure is negatively reinforced. And by that, it means, hey, you're doing terrible, but you better step it up because you suck. It's like that just pisses me off because then I kind of lose respect for the mentor. And I'm like, all right, well, now I don't want to work for you anymore. Now I don't even want to do good because no, screw you. But when when a mentor goes to me and says, hey, like you can get this, put in the work, man, because this could be something really great. Dude, that lights me up more than anything. The positive reinforcement, but also with pressure, that works really well on me. And I kind of learned that through getting taught by people. Noah, I don't know if that worked. Sometimes it's different for different people. Did you ever kind of approach those kind of situations differently and learn like what works and what doesn't? Some people don't like pressure at all. Some people love it.
Yeah. There were a couple of people who absolutely hated pressure, definitely. Like, and I know you can probably think of a couple already, but I think that most people regardless of like their like personal feelings towards music, if you can get that like group energy, that group hype up for something to be good, the potential for something to be like top-notch level of performance, like we could be really cool doing this, people want to do well, they want to improve, and they want to see you happy with what we created. So like there's a couple members who always they were really really focused on I guess pleasing me in each rehearsal. They wanted me to be happy with whatever they did, and honestly I didn't need that, I didn't require that from them, but if that was what they required to do better, go for it. I'll use that to make you improve, and it worked. People have improved from that kind of teaching, but like it's weird, it's a little weirdly manipulative, but like it works. It works is what works. So I don't change it, but
I don't know. Yeah, there are people that care.
There.
I mean, I saw it. I'm not even just saying in the group that you and I were in together. I see this in plenty of things I've been a part of. A lot of people care more about the approval of their idea of the power in their circle rather than the actual product of their own work. I see that all the time. I did see it in our group as well, in a couple scenarios, but I mean, in all facets. How did you just kind of, I guess you kind of said you just kind of were like, kind of use that to your advantage, but also like not like manipulating. How did you handle that?
Yeah, I don't want people to be like, I don't want people to think that I'm taking advantage of, I guess, their drive for whatever the project was or whatever the goal was. I don't want people to think that I'm like pushing them too hard or like, I don't know, even like, I just wanted my intentions to be very clear always. Like, I just want this to be a good performance and I want you to want it to be a good performance. Yeah. And as long as we were all on the same page with that, it worked and it would always be good. There were, of course, moments where people did not want to be there. They hated the rehearsal. They hated each other. But like the end goal is this performance is going to be good. And that always ended up pulling us back together.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. Yeah. I mean, I think whatever fuel you have to use in order to get to the next stage is something good to tap into.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Like, you obviously don't want to be like kind of that person you have to tap into to, because they want to make you proud. It's like, okay, this is a great fuel, but how far do I want to take this? Like, exactly. What is my level of being proud? Because you could always stretch that boundary to where you're never fully satisfied. But yeah, go ahead, Jack.
I was gonna say you can really cross that line, and there's an incredible movie.
Oh yeah,
called Whiplash. And it's literally, it involves a drummer, and it's about a very manipulative and honestly abusive teacher who takes advantage of a student, and he's so freaking talented, but he literally breaks this guy down psychologically to his core to get the best performance out of him possible. And he completely destroys his self-worth. He has him in the palm of his hands, and he destroys the line and literally ruins this guy. However, what the movie poses, this movie Whiplash poses, is guess what? He became the best. He did. So it was a really interesting question of what is too far to push somebody? Because while he'll need therapy for the rest of his life, he did become the best of the best.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting. I watched the movie and I was like, that's really interesting.
He may be fucked, but he's great.
Yeah, it's always a really, it's especially with musicians, and like if you have like child prodigies and stuff like that, that was something that, and this is not to say I was a child prodigy, I was not, but like I, as a kid, I was naturally inclined to music. I just loved it. It was every waking thought was music. I wanted to do music. So my parents put me in lessons for every single possible thing they could put me in. And I come to eventually hate it. Like piano was my first like main instrument. That was what I was doing. And there's that one song that I think you heard me play 1,000 times every time I went to a piano. I forget how it goes even right now, but
is it chopsticks? That
it was no. I mean, I played it a couple times.
There
was this one song that I remember learning, and it was just drilling it over and over and over. And I slowly fell out of love with that instrument. I was like, I think that with music, it's so difficult to like really healthily and perfectly put a young person into like that space where they have their own drive, because someone that young is not going to wake up every single day and practice their instrument for 3 hours to become a virtuoso, I guess. But it's just not realistic. No kid is going to do that. No teenager is going to do that. They want to go with their friends, hang out, do whatever. So it's not a mentality that someone that young can even have, but that's the level of practice and level of discipline that you need to be that good. So it will destroy any person, any young person mentally to become really, really good at an instrument. But like the appeal of being a master at an instrument is so high that they'll do it. They'll push their kids and they'll force you guys into it. And it's just like, I mean, your kid's talented. They hate you, but they're talented.
Do you think it always comes from the outside influence? And I bet most of the time it does, but have you ever experienced, have you ever met anybody that just was like, no, I don't want to hang out with friends. I want to work on the clarinet for another 3 hours because I want to be the best at the clarinet. Just on their own accord without influence.
Probably. I mean, I don't know for sure. There's a couple kids that I grew up with who are phenomenal pianists that I'm sure did that. I never saw them out or never saw them at parties, so I assume that's what they were doing. But, I mean, it's not really that common. You get every so often a kid who's just like, all they want to do is play instruments. And you'll see them on Ellen or something. I mean, not anymore, but... It's not as common to see a kid doing that anymore. It's just, I think people have kind of realized that it's not the healthiest behavior either.
Yeah. I would kind of equate this a lot to, like, you see athletes, like professional athletes, and then they retire and you see these interviews and it's like, so what are you doing now? And they're like, I don't know. Like, I'm just, like, that was my life.
Yeah.
And I need to redefine myself. And that's, music obviously has a much longer time horizon because you don't need to be using your body. But I mean, there's always burnout in everything you do. So I guess that was one of my questions too, is what is the biggest impact music has had on your life? And does it, I mean, you said you grew up playing day to day, but like for someone like me, who's not, who's on the bottom tier, I'm like, all right, I'm in a phase of alternative rock or like country. But for you, like, I'm sure you're breaking it down. It's like, oh my god, that was a great hook, or that was a great I don't know, something
essentially
like that.
That is kind of how I enjoy music. Like, I listen to music 24/7. If you ask my parents, they get pissed about it because I always have the headphones in. I'm listening, I don't hear them. But I have like my taste in music needs to like, it needs to constantly engage me, the song. Like, it can't just be like rap, like, or it can't just be like, if it's rap, it has to be, has the background has to have something like chord changes, instruments, or something going on. Like someone like Anderson .Paak, I don't know if you know him,
but
that is the kind of rapper who I really, really appreciate, because he doesn't just rap. He has like a bit of like a sing-songy tone, but he also like uses instruments, and his drumming, it sounds like he's rapping as well when he drums. Like, you can tell that he really, really loves his craft and he loves music, and he's doing it because he enjoys it. I mean, there's other people, I'm not going to say names because I'll get hate for it, but there's people who are doing it just to do it and they like the fame, and you can tell that they're good at what they're doing, but they're doing it because they enjoy being famous, not because they enjoy music. Countless musicians are like that. Even the really, really big names who do great performances and sound great and make great music, there's no heart in that song. There's no heart to the music. And you can really feel that sometimes with music. But like,
What's an example of
you can share an example if you want. It's not like you're gonna,
we're not big enough to worry. If a big artist is gonna see this.
Just don't say Taylor Swift. We can't deal with any Taylor Swift haters.
She's off
limits. Taylor Swift is off limits.
That's fair. Let's say
it's 22.
Okay, I know exactly what I'm gonna do. My roommate senior year absolutely was obsessed with listening to The Weeknd.
I don't like The Weeknd.
No.
I don't like The Weeknd. So
I cannot stand him.
I kind of like The Weeknd.
I think he's a great singer. I think he has a lot of talent. Like, mm-hmm. He could have the talent that T-Pain has, and he could make the music that T-Pain makes, but he is so obsessed with his fame. Like, you can look at The Weeknd and be like, this man is obsessed with fame. You tell. Look at that stupid show he made. Anyway, I'm not gonna get into that show. But like, people like T-Pain, he is doing music for fun. Like, he's having fun with it. He went on The Masked Singer.
Dude, I was
killed that. Had so much fun with that. Just made a song with Meghan Trainor, and that song is, if you listen to it, it's so fun. It just sounds like a like goofy cartoon song, and it's fun. That's just it. You can tell when people love music, and The Weeknd hates it.
Dude, I went on a little like Max Singer YouTube trail and saw him, T-Pain, and I was like, holy crap, this guy can sing.
Yeah, it blew me away. Dude, he's legitimately nuts. So good.
And
real introduction with T-Pain was our freshman year. He came to our school.
Yeah, he did. He was our guest.
Yeah, and it was so bad. Like, it just wasn't like, he wasn't bad, but just the vibes sucked. Like, everyone was like, this was garbage. And then he bullied us, and that was that.
Yeah, T-Pain like, bullied our school on Twitter.
Yeah, it was great. Loved it.
What did he say?
Yeah, there's that one clip that Emil posted. One tweet that got her banned.
I don't remember. I remember his original tweet. He was like, stuck in this place called Elon, like whatever the fuck that is.
Oh, so funny. Like, oh my God.
There's nothing to do here. And then the students jumped on. They're like, you're just mad that no one cared enough to see your show. It got pretty crazy pretty quickly.
Pretty wild. It was stupid, but that was my first like proper introduction to him. And like, he's since got a lot of traction. Now he's like,
it was literally like a year later he blew up because he did The Masked Singer and everyone realized he was really good. If he came to Elon after that, I bet the entire school would have gone to the concert.
Oh yeah. Oh,
100%. Somebody showed up in the monster suit. It's like, who is this?
We'll move on from just talking about musicians we like and don't like, but the Bruno Mars collab that he did a couple years ago, what was the name of it again? Do you know what I'm talking about? That it was a full
Subsonic?
Album. Yes.
Subsonic.
Yes.
Oh, Mullen. This is my favorite thing. I love this band.
So you introduced this album to me, and Patrick, you should actually check it out too, because it blew my mind with just how creative it was, how fun it was. It's so fun. Every single song on that album has a uniqueness to it, and like, I was blown away. And I realized, you know, maybe my taste in music isn't all that great because sometimes, like, when we were friends, sometimes you would just kind of crap on like certain music, and I was like, oh, he's just being all like Mr. Music guy, like he knows all that. But then when you shared that album, I was thinking to myself, oh, I see. This is what's kind of clicking for him. And this is a lot of the stuff that I'm listening to does not have this level of production going on. It's a lot of it's very basic. I mean, honestly, most pop songs are the same for chord rotation, and just not a lot of creative instruments used in the background. What are your thoughts on country, Noah, on that note?
Dangerous. This is so dangerous.
Morgan,
I don't love country music only because it tends to be a bit basic in terms of chord progression and instrumentation. It's just kind of simple and predictable. My problem is it's predictable. I like to not know where the music is going. If I can guess your next four chords before you play them, I'm bored. I've already like checked out of your song.
Okay.
But I prefer blues. Blues is kind of like a more soulful country. It's better. There's a lot more emotion to the music. There's just more passion there. There are country artists that I really respect that I think are really cool. There are country songs that are really, really popular that I like. And like, I know that Beyonce is doing a country album. I'll probably like a couple songs there. I won't listen to it that much because I don't like country, but I'll respect it because it's Beyonce. Like, that's what I mean. But I don't know. Country isn't my thing. It isn't. But I don't hate on the genre.
You know what this is like, honestly, Jack? Like, when I talk to you about movies, you, like, I might think it's a great movie, and then you break it down, and you're like, it's okay. Like, there wasn't much scene change and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, it's like, you're right. Same thing, but with music for Noah. And it's like,
yeah,
I'll agree. That is exactly Mullen. Mullen is, his level of just intelligence when it comes to movies is insane.
Yeah, it's like, how is it engaging the end user to like want that desire to, like, I don't know where it's going next. Like a Christopher Nolan movie, or it's like a Tenet or something like that. And it's like, I have no clue where this is going. And I'm intrigued to stay to the end because I can't predict it.
Yeah, I would say, to like, kind of, I feel like what Noah did for his passion for music, or sorry, I'm using you in the third person, talking directly to you. I feel like what you did, I mean, kind of similar to why I wanted to study film in college. I wanted to understand. I knew stuff I liked and didn't like, but I wanted to understand what was going into that process to make it good or bad. And I feel like you did the same thing with music. We all hear stuff we like and hear stuff we don't like. I've talked about with food. I know when food tastes good. I know when food tastes bad. I don't know. I couldn't describe you why it tastes good or bad if I've tried. And honestly, for music, I can kind of describe it to a degree, but not at your level. You could actually describe why you think a song you're listening to is a good song. You can actually like break down the composition of a song and the way the instruments blended and the way the artists came up with the melody and or encompassing harmonies or the bass line and or the treble and what instruments they use to go in there. And even the language I'm using is not perfect right now. I understand that.
It's right though. You're getting there.
Yeah. Pretty much it. But you can actually understand and really listen, not just to the melody of a song, which I feel like so many of us do, especially for pop songs. It's got a kind of a catchy melody and then it's stuck in our head, and then it's got a four chord structure that works, and then we're like, oh yeah, it's a fun song, it's a good song. And then, but you, I feel like, are actually really trying to find more creativity or find more risks, and I feel like that's where the art form of it really comes in. Am I correct in this?
I mean I'm not gonna glorify it that much. It's nothing special. Every musician who listens to music will do this innately. You will just listen to it and analyze it more than you want to. A lot of people get annoyed by that aspect of being someone who plays music.
Like, it's called being a nerd, and it's awesome.
That's, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's, I second that.
About anything, you know, like that's just how it is.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not that big of a deal. But like, does make music more fun for me. I get to like just know this little thing about a song that not anyone else wouldn't really think about, or I get to just like really listen to a harmony that no one else really would listen to or care about in a song. And that's why it draws it to me. Not because of the lyrics. I don't care about the lyrics half the time. I've forgotten them half the time. So like, I like to be able to be like, oh, I can play this on the saxophone, or I know how to play that chord progression on the piano, and I can go back home, do that, and like sing along with it and cover the song myself. That's why I like music.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's
see,
so cool.
And that's, like, you say it's not a big deal, but Jack and I love talking to people that are like that, because you look at someone like Gordon Ramsay, you know, when he's cooking. To us, like Jack was saying, he knows it tastes good, but he doesn't know why. And you listen to Gordon Ramsay cook and describe food, and it's like the flavor and the acidity and the tanginess or whatever. And to, like, I might not entirely know what that correlates to, but like, if you can do that to music, we can tell you're passionate about it, and you just engage people and bring them in. And it's like, I don't know what you're saying, but I love it.
Yeah, that's how it is most of the time.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Let's jump topics real quick, because I kind of want to.
Go for it.
I kind of want to talk about, I guess, in a way, when you first came to Elon, because I thought going to college, let's just talk about going to college. It doesn't have to specifically be Elon, but I thought it was a huge change in my life. It definitely was for you too, but it wasn't just moving, you know, a couple hours up the highway like I did. You moved from a whole different country. What was that like? Were you scared?
No. Oh God, no. I was very excited. I was ready to leave. I wanted to be out so bad. I was excited. There was nothing but excitement.
That's awesome.
What was the biggest shift in what you were accustomed to growing up, and then versus going to the college lifestyle in America?
I mean, the obvious one is a lot less black people in North Carolina.
Yeah.
That is very shocking. That one was initially the big kicker. But I got used to it. I didn't really care. It's not like I don't have black friends at Elon. It wasn't that big of a deal to me. Like, I never joined any of the communities at Elon because it wasn't... I'm not African-American. I'm Afro-Caribbean, I guess, is what it could be described as. So it's not... That kind of culture I don't even click with. So regardless, yeah, it wasn't that big of a deal for me at all.
Yeah. Were there any like culture shocks that, or if you want to even get specific with me, things that I did that I thought were normal that you were like, what the fuck is wrong with you, you weirdo?
Jack Lan.
Besides Jack Lan. That's too specifically me.
Like, put my hands around your neck. Hey, Jack Land.
Jack Land, just for you listening, because we've covered it already. I tend to doze off and go into my own little world and pace around. And Noah and I lived in a small dorm together. So I would just pace across the dorm. And I think Noah was about to blow his head off when we lived together.
It's creepy.
sorry.
Okay, with culture shocks with you, the one time that I genuinely was like, I'm living in a different universe was when I went to your house. I think it was in the first time I ever visited your house, when we went to that Quinn concert during COVID.
Yes.
And I slept over, and in the morning I came downstairs and I was just like getting breakfast. And your mom was downstairs and she was just cooking breakfast. Just had all the food was already done. First of all, my first thing that I was like, what? She was wearing shoes in the house and jeans. And I was like, okay, that's strange, but that's fine. Whatever. I assume that's just her norm. And then I think you came downstairs next. I was already sat at the table with Sam, and you came downstairs next. You were already dressed in shoes as well. Walked downstairs. Mm-hmm. I assumed that it was normal that I was wearing shoes because I was a visitor and we were leaving. And you were wearing shoes because you were leaving. Fine. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. And then you go, oh, where's dad? And your mom goes, oh, he's out back fixing something in the garage. I went, okay. I think this is like a weird sitcom that I'm living in, but that's fine. I guess that's strange. And not 2 seconds later, your sister walks in. Hey, mom, do you mind if I can make some cookies? I'm going to have a picnic with my friends. And she's like, oh, of course, sweetie, go ahead. Also, wearing shoes in the house. I was like, what is... That was the first, like, this man lives a very different life to me.
Oh, that's so funny. That might even be slightly uniquely... our family.
It's not like a Disney sitcom.
That's they're gonna crack up when they hear that.
That's such a big thing with my mom. She hates it if I wear shoes in the house. Like, it's not allowed. Shoes off at the door immediately.
Yeah, shoes in the house. I've plenty of my friends, especially like friends in Charlotte, like in the neighborhood, I take my shoes off before going into the house. Like, that might just be my family thing that doesn't care about that as much.
It's like Jack Lynn. This is another Jack Lynn thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Patrick, I mean, what about honestly, your family? Do you guys always take off your shoes? I feel like you guys do when I visited. Yeah, I always take mine off going to your house.
Yeah. Yeah, it was always in the garage or mudroom kind of thing and, you know, walk around. I like walking around in bare feet, though. Less clothes, the better for me.
See, for me,
yeah, I like being free.
For me, walking around barefoot kind of grosses me out. But maybe it's because our family walks around with shoes in the house. Yeah, so I'll do socks. I mean, honestly, it's not like we just just to defend my family because they're gonna listen to me and be like, "What the hell?" It's not. We don't just walk around everywhere with shoes. It's socks. So if
you guys got the toe shoes that you're wearing.
No, we walk around with socks. We'll walk around like the kitchen area with shoes because the garage door goes right into there on the way to the laundry room. But we do not just run around the house with our shoes. We are not disgusting people. My mom's gonna like flip out. She's gonna call me after she listens to this. She's like, everyone's gonna think it's disgusting. No, you're fine.
Apologies.
That's funny.
Any weird holiday? What do you think of Thanksgiving?
Oh, I mean, my mom's American. She was born in New York.
Oh, that'll do.
So we did Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Okay,
but we just did different. Our food was better, but I mean, that's neither here nor there.
What's a Thanksgiving dinner in your house like?
Oh, it's like we have shredded beef, which is Cajun style beef, is what it's called. But it's like just shredded and like pulled apart, like kind of like pulled pork. Kind of, but it's cooked a little differently. We do like the candied sweet potatoes, like mushrooms on, not mushrooms, marshmallows on top, baked macaroni, the usual vegetables, turkey, of course. Sometimes they'll do ham. I don't know. The meat doesn't really matter. They'll just choose whatever they want. Yeah, gotcha. There's no specific. It just came in a style of food that they'll just do. That's it.
Yeah, sounds pretty normal. All right.
And we don't do any Thanksgiving songs or pray to the natives or whatever it is that you guys do.
I was going to say, I don't think we do that.
I don't know.
I don't do offerings in the backyard or anything like that.
We do watch the Charlie Brown, though. The Charlie Brown special. That one we watch every single time.
Oh, that, I think the Thanksgiving one's my favorite.
It's very sweet.
I think the Christmas one's overrated, in my opinion.
I like the music from it. It's cute.
Yeah, I know. That one song.
Lucy's just on the... Or what's his name? Yeah, Lucy, right?
That's the one that, like, takes the football away?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Landis and Lucy.
All right, one question.
Okay, what do you get... Sorry.
Oh, good. One question I always love asking people. I'm going.
Okay, go.
So I know you said you're like figuring some stuff out for teaching, but if success was guaranteed, what would you be doing?
That's a hard question because like there's a couple things that I know I kind of want to do later in life, but there's things that I know that I want to be doing right now. Like I would love to be doing vital signs still. Like I feel like I just reached the peak of what I could have been doing. As a music director, I wish that I could continue doing that right now. But realistically, I would love to be like a touring band, just playing songs, just having fun. The tour bus part of it, maybe not, but just the performing in different venues, I would love that.
Do it.
I mean, I gotta make the music first. It's harder than it looks. But
would you ever be willing to join one? You know, like instead of being in charge of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome.
I assume that I'll eventually rise to that that point of being in charge of the music.
And you could only be not making the top creative decisions for so long. You could suck it up, for sure, but I know it would get to a point where you have so much passion for it. I know that you could not just like receive your sheet music and just learn it and play it.
Unless whoever's in charge has the same like that same drive and is pushing it in the same kind of way, then fine, I don't care.
Yeah.
But if I feel like they're not, that there's potential that's being wasted, I'm taking over. Don't care. Last year of Vital Sign.
It's hard to cue.
You know, it's interesting that you say that right now you would still want to be doing vital sign stuff to me. But not because I frown upon it at all. In fact, it's the opposite because you were right. I mean, you are only getting better and better at your job and the group that you were in charge of. And I'll speak to everyone else in it. I mean, real deal musicians were in the group, musical theater majors, some who have Broadway capabilities were in that group. One of our guys was on Broadway that was in that group. And yeah, and you were just getting better and better. I totally understand why you would want to continue that momentum completely. It makes so much sense to me. It's just kind of weird to me. I was just kind of, my thought was it kind of sucks that it was, you know, we graduated college and it was a group at our college, but it did kind of become, I'm not saying like more than that, but it became its own thing. It really did not feel like Elon at all. It felt like this, it was just a cool group that we were in.
I want to say that our freshman year, it felt like an acapella college group, a college acapella group. Like it didn't feel like anything special. It just felt like another group. I just joined another group. After my junior year, I think that after the ICCAs, when we did that, I think that we were really just so bonded that I was like, this, we have to keep doing this. Like we're just too good. We're too close knit and we work too well together to not continue. And it just sucks that we just logically could not do it, but maybe one day in the future, you never know.
Was the ICCA one, was that the one I went to?
You saw our ICCA set at that one concert we went to.
That was good.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was sick. Is that the one with the where the Houston people came to?
Yes, that was that concert. Props, yeah, friends.
That was a sick concert.
Mm.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That was so freaking
definitely the best Make a Wish.
Oh my god.
That was
raised
the most money for that one.
Yeah, that was a sick concert. Yeah, that was a Make a Wish benefit. Yeah, a cappella will break it. I know we're getting nerdy for people who are listening to us about a cappella, but the niche of a cappella and the talent that's in there is so insane to me. It blows my mind.
Crazy. Crazy. There were some vocalists in that group that I have genuinely, I don't think I will ever meet someone that is talented like that. Like, there were people who had like 4-octave ranges. There were ladies singing tenor parts, soprano parts at the same song. Like, it was insane. And they all could riff. They all had so much solo, like, star power. It was insanity, the amount of people in this group who could have their own solo career if they really wanted.
Yeah, and it made me think, because I had a realization, because I kind of had a click for myself where I was like, no, these are people at the top of their game, and some people who are honestly have more talent or have their skills are more sharpened than some professional musicians who are more in the music industry who are making millions. And I realize how much of it is kind of the how you have to handle your talent and how you have to project your talent and how you have to market yourself. That was a really interesting thought I had, because there were people invited. I'll say her name because I'm hyping her up, but Macy Bischoff, I think could be.
Yeah, I was going to say.
She is that good, where I think she is better than some singers that I hear on Spotify. They're like famous singers that I hear on Spotify.
100%.
But it's 100%. Just, you know what I mean? But it's, I mean, and if she wants that, that's her journey. I don't know what she wants or anything, but it's not, it just really reminded me that it is not talent alone.
Mm-mm.
And honestly, mm-mm. What do you think goes into it? Is it knowing the right, it's partly knowing the right people.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. If I knew one single person in the music industry that was like really up there and I could just say, hey, hi, this is me performing with my group. I can sing. I do this. I would probably be on stage somewhere at some point. Like, because I'm young enough to be up there. And I have refined my skill enough where I can perform at a professional level. There's no reason that people my age should not be on stage with these celebrities or with these famous performers. They should be really taking advantage of the amount of young people that are really at the top of their game. Not at the top of the game, but in terms of like, comparing to other people who are at the top of their game, who are like older in the music industry, we can compare to them, genuinely can. And it's just unfortunate that it's just because of Hollywood and how it is, it's kind of just stuck and it's not going to really move or shift. But you know.
Is it like location based, I'm assuming? And
I mean,
obviously marketability and how much reach you have?
I think with social media nowadays, the location doesn't matter as much. Like, I feel like once you have whatever the look is that people want and like that sound that people want, you will blow up somehow, some way. You have that talent, you will gain popularity. Now, not to say it's going to be like Beyonce level, but you could become like a TikTok star probably. Like, it's not impossible.
I have a question that I think you might know the answer to, Noah. Have you experienced any musicians that are doing really well right now that did get their start on social media and by exposing themselves in that fashion?
I mean, other than, I'm not going to list any of like the A-list celebrities. I'm trying to think of like people who I know personally.
Oh.
I mean, it's there's a couple people who aren't as like, they're not celebrities. There's a couple TikTok people. I'm not going to list them because they're not that famous, but that have, because they're on TikTok and because they have like that following for like whatever, like Vine kind of style posting, but because they have talent, like every so often will sing, like someone like Brittany Broski, she will sing on her silly little TikTok, whatever video. And her voice is insane. She is like Mariah Carey levels of vocal agility and vocal talent, and she could, because of her level of I guess I don't know, fame, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. She could record a whole album and blow up overnight, but that's just not what she wants. There's a lot of TikTok stars that are like that, and they're not huge. They maybe have like a couple thousand followers who have these amazing voices. And I've heard a couple of them who have posted or recorded songs, like Sarah Eisen, who we covered, Blue. She started on social media. She was just posting on TikTok, and she did acapella when she was younger, and then decided to... She only recorded that one song, but she blew up from that and gained a lot of notoriety in the music industry, but because she does not really what she wanted to pursue, she didn't pursue it, of course, but it's viable. It really, really is, but you have to have that drive. You have to pursue it day in, day out.
Yeah. The reason I asked the question is because I felt like we would kind of have an eclectic song selection sometimes, and we would pick some artist that I felt like kind of got started in a newer way rather than just like the big Billboard artists. And it's, yeah, I like that. I mean, kind of trendy that they would just kind of, you know, you could post song. We post this podcast on Spotify. You could post music on Spotify if you want to. And sometimes they market it in a clever way and it catches. And I just think it's really interesting that that opportunity presents itself now. I don't know. Like,
I know you know the band Lawrence. We did it a couple times.
I was thinking about Lawrence. I just wasn't saying them. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a lot more posts recently. They didn't do it as much to begin with, but they've been posting a ton, and every single TikTok has a couple thousand views. And I didn't think that would work that well for them, but it's doing great. They're doing numbers.
Yeah, Patrick. So, there's this band called Lawrence, and they're a brother and sister duo, and they're phenomenal. They have really cool creative music. Their voices, since they're siblings, it's a really cool blend. The girl is a freaking powerhouse of a vocalist, and their lyrics are actually interesting because they're singing about just really different, I would say, not normal topics to be singing about, since they are like a brother and sister. It's not really about sex, drugs, money. It's not even close to those topics. It's really good. No. It's really interesting. I love them.
I love finding those. I mean, when I do go on social media or like shorts or something like that, like it's like, oh, that's different than what you typically see. And it is, I think summarizing that, it's, if you have good quality in whatever you're putting out, like you're going to do well. Like, people will gravitate towards quality. Yeah,
absolutely.
There's one, I'm not a big rap guy, but I wouldn't really say it's rap. It's more like the lyrical storytelling, kind of like an Eminem type-ish. Mm-hmm. I don't know music enough to be able to express that correctly. But Connor Price, he's started to kind of blow up, and
he kind of does it with
a bunch of like cool little like he does shorts and TikToks of him like, hey, let's throw this beat together, and it's like, ooh, okay, that's a cool sound, and then it just makes a song off of it. And he's like a little bit older, 30 something, and he's like just telling his story of his journey, which is cool to me, instead of like the typical rap where it's like, yo, I have money, I go to the strip club, and or there's someone shooting on my block.
It blew my mind. I'm sorry, I want to jump on this real quick. It blew my mind how many songs I listened to when I was like ages 10 to 13. It wasn't just about like sex and money. It was specifically, they were all about going to the strip club. So many. Like Flo Rida, all of his songs were about going to a strip club. And I didn't understand that was what it meant until I like listened to the songs again recently. And I'm like, oh, this guy just clearly really liked going to strip clubs. I'm like, what? It's just so weird. It's just such a weird thing for me. And it's not just him. It's a lot of them. I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't get how that became the trend. Or I don't know. It's interesting.
I mean, you can think of what society's really like prioritizing at that time, like early 2000s was really like that, like kind of freeing, kind of like, oh, we're all having a good time, like,
yeah,
this is like a new millennium, like kind of, it's like that's kind of what was going on. So I mean, it makes sense, kind of like now rap is a little bit more emotional, a bit more deep, like that Megan Thee Stallion song, I don't remember what it's called, but like everyone was like, oh my gosh, this is like depressing as hell.
I don't
know. People develop as society changes.
I haven't heard either.
I don't remember it, but.
But.
Saw it on Twitter. It's cesspool of hate.
A good old, the deep dark portal of the scrolling.
Oh my god, I'm sorry. It's called X now. I actually forgot X. About that.
Oh yeah, that's true. X, good old Musk.
Jesus.
X. But yeah, have you guys ever like had songs that you've always really liked but have never really listened to the words, but then decide to actually listen to the words and kind of realize the song was actually about something you didn't think it was about at first? You guys ever had?
I mean, there's Pumped Up Kicks. Like, everyone had that one.
Yeah, Pumped Up Kicks is the big one.
That was the big one.
A song, honestly, the song just never even would have come out today.
Oh, God, no.
I mean, it's literally a song, it was literally a radio hit, and the song was legitimately about a guy that decided, I'm going to kill these kids, and they're in Pumped Up Kicks, and I'm going to shoot them with a gun. Crazy that was literally one of the most listened to songs the year it came out. And it was about a guy wanting to murder all the other kids in the Pumped Up Kicks. Like, really think Banger. About that. That's crazy. And we loved it because we had no idea what it was talking about. Even like to Not go really crazy, like Ring Around the Rosie, the nursery rhyme. Like,
yeah,
dude, I sang that song a lot when I was a kid, and I thought it was, you know, just about having fun. We would literally like swing around a pole, me and my neighborhood friends, and sing the song and go, ashes, ashes, we all fall down. And then we'd like release the pole and just go flying. And we thought it was just silly and fun, but it was literally about like dying a terrible death of a real time of our history. Yeah. Wait, what's it? What? Yeah, I don't even, you know, we're talking about sketchy stuff. I don't know if I should fully get into what Ring Around the Posey is actually about.
I don't even know. I mean, I know there's ashes, ashes, we all fall down. What, your like house burned down or something?
It was Ring Around the Posey, Pocket Full of Posey, ashes, ashes, we all fall down. Was it about like a disease?
Plague or something? I thought it was about the plague.
Or yeah, that's what I was thinking. I thought it was plague. Like it was.
I could look it up.
I don't know. Is it how kids coped with the plague?
Yeah, just swing around the pole
by setting themselves on fire.
It's like what was that song, Duck and Cover, that we learned back in like eighth grade? It's like duck and cover whenever there's a bomb coming.
What?
Because it was during
yeah, because it was during experience there.
You guys remember that? What was it? That catchy song, Duck and Cover.
No. This is
there's
we were all singing it. Patrick, what the hell are you talking about over
it
there?
Was we learned it in AP history. It was it was Vietnam War or Korean War or something like that, but it was a commercial.
It was like the Cold War, like fear of nuclear warfare.
That yes, that's what it was.
Yeah,
it was
okay,
like,
now you're ringing the bell.
It's like this guy just running through a neighborhood and it shows a bomb coming and it's like, all right, hide under your table or hide in your bathtub and you'll be safe. And we're like, I think
were shown some really weird stuff in our history classes.
This was dropping of the atomic bombs in Japan. And we were all like, yeah, if you hide under a table and an atomic bomb drops, you're fucked. There ain't no way good old kitchen table is going to save your ass.
Oh, no, I want to ask you this for someone who didn't like learn. Well, maybe you learned about American history, but you weren't taught by the American school system for history. What is y'all's opinions on like, okay, I don't want to like get you in any trouble. What are your thoughts on our nuclear arsenal? What did they tell you guys about it? Because we didn't learn anything really about it besides the fact that they are the only ones that have done it.
We didn't learn really anything about America because Kevin Allen's the rest of the world really doesn't care. So they just don't teach it in schools.
Fair enough.
You know, like maybe like the big wars that happened, like those dates. Mm-hmm. That's about it. They'll just tell you the dates and like the gist of what it was about, and then they go on to the next thing. Also, they had slaves. Next thing, like that's the entirety of American history. That's all they told us.
Dude, what are so your what is
Civil War and they had slaves? That was about it.
What about like the the Revolutionary War for American independence? Because our perspective of it that we were taught is like the way that the British were running things was just so terrible and they were taxing us and we wanted to start something that had true freedom and we fought for it and we earned it. I know, like, did they cover the Revolutionary War at all? And what was that like?
Nope.
They did. They didn't even cover it.
They didn't really. No, it was like, it's actually like human history, like ancient history. Like they taught about like all the way from like evolution up to like all the different like periods. And then when they get up to like modern day history, they just tell you the big points. They don't go into depth of what happened. We were clueless. We didn't learn about anything. If you wanted to learn, you had to do some research on your own. Like, we would write papers about whatever we wanted. History was more broad. They didn't teach you, like, history of the country you're in. They taught you world history, just, like, about the general existence of us on this planet. That's kind of how.
Like,
that's another thing. I guess if you want to talk about the culture difference, I think my education was very world-centered. It was very focused on just like everything. Mm-hmm. But I think like American schools is very American focused, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but like I think it does kind of center people's world to just be the country that they're in rather than
100%. I mean, Jack and I have been fortunate enough to be able to travel a little bit, and that is very evident. Like, if you talk to someone who's never been outside of America, they think America is like the greatest, and there's nothing in comparison to it because the rest of the world is a bunch of Neanderthals.
Depends on who you talk to. Because like before I left America, I didn't think that. It depends on who you talk to.
I'm definitely exaggerating, but I mean, there's definitely people that are like, oh yeah, I have no reason to leave, and like you don't. But I mean, everyone else out there, like, there's so many people. Like, I have friends from Ireland, and they're like, yeah, we usually, a lot of people live in Australia or other parts of the EU. Like, it's much more commonplace to go live somewhere else just because it's part of a more global world. Whereas, like, America, there's a very small percentage of people that will go live outside the US.
That's a good point.
I feel like the existence of patriotism has something to do with that. Probably like that doesn't exist here. So
also, I mean, partly geographical. If you're over in Europe, it's a lot easier to move to another country than it is move to Europe. That might play a part of it. Patriotism probably does too. I'm not negating
Brexit,
it.
You know.
Yeah.
Good old Brexit. Ruined everything.
But yeah, the reason I asked about the Revolutionary War was because, and like, I'm happy with how things turned out, but I was kind of thinking about it, and I don't want to be hit as an anti-American person. You know, happy America won, yay! But okay, it's just all right. Here's a thought I had. So, basically, a bunch of Europeans moved to the continent of North America. And the British said, okay, we're starting our colonies now. Like, hell yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, they were like, hey, citizens of our government, you have to pay us taxes for these imports. Because, you know, when you buy things, you pay taxes. And all the colonists of Britain said, we don't want to do that. We're not in the mood. If you did that today, the IRS is up your ass, like, you wouldn't believe. That'd be crazy. If I refuse to pay my taxes, you never see me again. And, and everyone talks. It's just funny because a lot of it's like, it's ridiculous. It's unjust. But, you know, it's what governments do. They make you pay taxes. But America just said, nah, we're not doing it. And we're willing to go to war over it. And then they won.
Yeah. And then let us repeat the same thing with our country years later.
Yeah, I mean, I do love of what went into our Constitution, and I think the Bill of Rights is fucking badass, especially the First Amendment more than anything.
What's the First Amendment?
It's freedom of speech, freedom of religion.
Oh, yeah, if only we followed it.
Yeah, freedom of press. Like freedom of press, expression, right to protest. That's pretty cool. And now I'm ready to steer clear because I don't want to get any more political than I already have.
I'm so ready.
Very true.
I am so very ready true. To end any discussion of politics there. And anyone listening, I was just making a fun anecdote because I was just like comparing. It's tax season right now, so I was thinking about this. That if I pulled,
oh, I don't have those.
If I pulled, a,
what?
You have no taxes.
You guys, in the Cayman
no,
Islands?
Zero tax free.
Oh, yeah, there's so.
Why do you think people there's put their so many money that, over yeah, here in movies?
Yeah, there's oh, so many yeah. people this, that come to the Cayman
Scotia Bank.
I knew that.
I didn't.
There.
I forgot
Swedish banks.
That.
Swedish banks.
One day.
Yeah. So, yeah. But no, I just thought it was kind of funny because I was like, I mean, obviously I did pay IRS. I pay taxes are paid. We're good. But I was just thinking about that. Oh, the reason this country started is because people got annoyed about this whole tax thing and decided they didn't want to do it anymore. I'm sure there's more to it than that. There's more to it than that. But I was just kind of, that's like a, you know, that's a stand-up comedy bit. That's
history
that
lessons
was.
With Jack Mullen. Don't send your skin, don't send your kids to school. Just listen.
So
to
basically, this group of dudes were getting taxed and they were really annoyed because they didn't want to pay it. So they were like, let's start our own country. And then they did.
They said, fuck it, chicken strips. And they moved.
And now we're here.
Anyway, I'm not going to.
There we go. All right.
I'm going to stop there.
No, anything else you want to share with anyone? Or?
Sorry, that's funny. Anything else on your mind, Noah?
Anything? I don't know. I'm trying to think of something controversial that I could say quickly. Something about like, maybe like Taylor Swift. I don't know. So, anyways. Nah, I ain't got nothing.
Yeah.
Well, this is awesome, man. And it's great hearing your perspective, especially on the music and how you break that down and look at it differently than someone just listening to it for working out or on a day-to-day basis. So that's really cool and you're passionate about it and we can see that. So.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. I do.
Yeah. No, it was so great to have you on, and it's always great to talk to you. And you're one of my closest friends, Noah. I love you to death. Thank you so much for coming on. We both really appreciate it.
I don't know who you are. What is your name? Please. Stop this. No, I love you, too. I love you, too.
Yeah. And keep us updated on what you're up to. I hope one day you decide to go on a tour and do it and send it. And
I'll
I know,
think about it.
And I know one day you will.
Yeah, man. And do you have any socials that you want to share with anyone? Or?
Yeah, anything you want to plug, feel free.
I like having no digital footprint.
All right.
Cool.
Fair, that might be hard. Zero. Might be hard to tour with, but all right. Fair. Hey guys, no one knows me, but
all right.
Here I
if
am.
You want to find Noah, look him up on White Pages. That's the only way you'll ever be able to find him.
You type in my name, you'll probably find something somewhere. I've been in things. Don't go searching.
I've been in things.
Please.
But yeah, all right, then we'll wrap it there. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. As always, and if you do like what you're listening to, feel free to leave a 5-star review from wherever you're listening from. Follow the podcast, leave a like on the podcast, interact with us, reach out to us on any of our social medias in any way. If you do reach out to us, we will respond, especially if you have any ideas, anything you want to hear us talk about. If you have any desire to come on and want to share your story and want to talk about it, trust me, we are open ears to that completely, and we'd love to have a conversation with you. So thank you so much. We love you guys, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Peace.